Hey, it's Bob Stauffer. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Oilers Now ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
You can text us on the Ashley Fine Floors text line. Get the new floors you always wanted. Ashley Fine Floors, 143rd Street, 111th Avenue, open Monday to Saturday. Our game day trivia presented by Pro-Am Sports, your fan cave specialist. All correct answers enter to win an autographed Stuart Skinner jersey from Pro-Am Sports. Visit them online or in Edmonton on St. Albert Trail. 95 draft in Edmonton, the only NHL draft ever held in Edmonton. The Oilers had the 6th overall pick. Fans chanted, "Don't, don't, 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 don't." Glenn Sather and Barry Fraser, in their infinite wisdom, took Steve Kelly. Tim knew that it was Steve Kelly, who ended up getting flipped later on for Roman Hamrlik, and not a bad deal from Slats. All right, we are pleased to be joined under... We wish it were under somewhat different circumstances here. From PHNX Phoenix, some would say, Craig Morgan, longtime beat writer in town. He's our Oilers Now headliner, brought to you by Wilhauk Beef Jerky. It's the best you've ever tasted. Search for Wilhauk, W-I-L-H-A-U-K today. And that's to basically tell us this Arizona story. Craig, this has got to be, like, for a guy like you who's covered the team for several years in a couple different incarnations with different publications, this has got to be kind of hard to watch here at Mullet Arena.
It is. You know, it's funny. I woke up today thinking, yeah, I'm not that emotional about this. And then the text messages come and the phone calls come from former players and executives and coaches. And by the time you read all these things, you realize just you're back in the magnitude of the moment. This is it. It's unbelievable we got to this point. There were so many times before where I thought we were at this point, and
right.
Gary Bettman pulled another rabbit out of his hat, but this time he could not find one. This is it, and this is the last game in Arizona.
So even though Gary Bettman gets booed wherever he goes, the fact is he did Edmonton a solid, you know, the Canadian Assistance Program. It's crazy now that you think about it because the Oilers have been a revenue contributor for a number of years since we've gone to a cap. But 2001 and 2004, he helped keep Edmonton in the National Hockey League during the early days of the Edmonton Investors Group. I don't know how many times he stepped up and helped broker deals from how many different owners have they had here in Arizona?
I've lost count.
But at least five or six, right?
Yes.
I mean, Andrew Barraway, you could write an entire book about that guy, the stories that are around that guy. There was Jerry Moyse, a Mormon trucker that owned the team. Isn't that ironic, the team going to Salt Lake here? That's when Wayne was working for them.
Mm-hmm.
So is there at least a belief, Craig, that Gary did about as much as he possibly could to save the team here?
I think Gary did everything he could do. Aside from, I will say this, when we're talking about the history of ownership with this franchise, it's obviously been a problem from one group to the next. The NHL is the body that vetted all those owners. So
right.
Maybe it just shows how difficult it was to find someone suitable to come into this situation with the arena. That was the big problem. But, you keep finding groups that, quite frankly, didn't know what they were doing, and now we're at this place we're in now.
Well, and we're in an arena for Arizona State, which is awesome for college hockey and is an unbelievable broadcast location if you're a visiting broadcaster, but it's got 4,600 fans.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think I told you the number a couple of weeks ago. The Edmonton Oil Kings were out of the playoffs in December. They're rebuilding. Of course, that's what happens in junior hockey. It's cyclical. They averaged 10,784 fans per game for their final 10 regular season games. That's
yeah.
a team that was out of it at Christmas. And here we got 4,600 fans, and we're not even sure what the makeup is going to be, what percentage Oiler fans versus Coyotes fans tonight.
Yeah, and the optics of this arena, I think, started to wear on everybody. And listen, when Marty Walsh came in as the executive director of the NHLPA, that message got a lot louder. It started reaching other players. They started parroting it. And I think he was successful in putting pressure on. Now, there are a lot of other factors we can talk about with the collapse of this franchise. But this arena, as great as it is for college, became an embarrassment for the NHL. And that was one of the factors, certainly, that drove them out.
How is Alex Murillo being perceived here in town?
Not well.
Okay.
Not well. He is persona non grata. I don't know if he'd get a single percent in a public opinion poll right now.
Okay, that bad.
Yeah, it's not bad.
And then the plan to bid on some new land and then to go, because apparently the way, and we just had Elliot Friedman. We have Frank on the show Mondays and Fridays, Frank Cervelli. We have Elliot every Wednesday. And our understanding is that he's going to have a five-year window to negotiate a buyback back into the league.
First right of refusal. But there are some benchmarks he needs to hit. He needs to acquire land within the first year. He's got to get the arena built, obviously. But yes, the league is giving him that. And I think more than anything, that shows the legal situation they were in. If they tried to force a sale, I think Alex Morello was going to take him to court. Yeah. And the league didn't want that. So they had to make concessions. The bad side of that is you're handing the team potentially back to the guy that cost the city the team.
We have Brian Lawton on the show every Tuesday, the former general manager of the Tampa Bay Lightning, started Octagon's player agency. He brokers sales of franchises. He worked on the Minnesota deal. I've often wondered about the current owner of the Phoenix Suns is Matt
Ishbia.
Okay. Could there be, and I know that the current venue doesn't have a plant for the ice, but could that theoretically maybe be something in the future?
I think Matt Ishbia probably wants a new arena, but that we're talking about 10 years down the road. Okay. Right? He's going to want a new arena. So at that point, maybe it could be viable. You know, there are a lot of reports on his level of interest, and Matt Ishbia wasn't going to get involved in this while it wasn't for sale. But here's what I would say to you. Matt Ishbia might have had some interest, but not at the price that they sold it for. I don't think he felt
like Morello's going to do pretty good.
He's going to do really well. He's going to collect $1 billion after the relocation fee is distributed. He's going to collect $1 billion. And I don't think Matt Ishbia thought the franchise was worth that.
Longtime beat writer covering the Arizona Coyotes, Craig Morgan, joining us here live in Mullet Arena. There's another perhaps frustrating perspective. I do a grid, as you can see, for every single game all year long. And one of the things that, and it's something because we try to get every, especially in the Western Conference, every GM on the show whenever we're on the road to have a game. And Arizona's bench depth with what they got coming in their organization would probably be top eight prospects if you included having Cooley and Gunther on that list right now. Like, they're finally, to me, at a place where I'm looking, you know, they got two-thirds of a top line with Keller and Schmaltz. They got two-thirds of a second line with Cooley and Gunther, who in 5 years from now are going to be two-thirds of a first line.
Yeah.
Doan looks like he's a promising prospect as a second-rounder. I've seen Geeky this year. He's going to be pretty good. I know Lamoureux had an injury-plagued year, but his team is unbelievable in the Quebec League this year. They got a couple Russians coming. Do they finally have the competent management? Is that the part that really sucks if you're a Coyotes fan?
I think that's the gut punch to fans. I mean, losing a team is awful as it is, right? But with all that you have endured, the incompetent ownership group, the lack of resources, and really aside from the team that moved here from Winnipeg, you've never had really competitive teams. Dave Tippett did a wonderful job in the few years he was here leading this team to three straight playoff berths. But when you look at the depth of the prospect pool, and even some of them, as you mentioned, that are here now, it's never been better. They have the hockey ops side locked down with Bill Armstrong, with the scouting staff, with the development staff. You can see it coming. It's probably 3 years away, and now it's going to happen in Salt Lake City. So you pulled the rug out from under them again.
Speaking of Salt Lake, what's your understanding about how many people are going to end up going from this current organization?
We shall see. There are 31 members of the hockey operations staff that do not have contracts right now. My understanding is everybody else is going. Yeah. On the business side, maybe nobody.
And there was a heavy influence with the Morello sort of family and extended family, Gutierrez, and as the business, I mean, to the point that at the draft they went on and on and on, and people started booing in Montreal the 1 year when they all went out there in the same suits and started talking about their business stuff. But you don't envision those guys carrying forward.
No.
Was this at the end of the day partially about a casino deal as well for Morello at one point?
Well, I mean, all of the professional owners here have rights to casinos. The Coyotes really haven't done much with it. If you look at Sahara Bets, it's an online betting app, right? And they didn't make any money with it. When we had been told this guy had experience in the casino industry. He owns two casinos, so we thought, okay, he's really going to cash in on this. Thus far, they really haven't taken advantage of it, even like the other owners in town.
Yeah. So, sorry, he has two casinos?
Yeah. Like, one in Vegas and one in Reno.
Which one does he have?
The Sahara's in Vegas, yeah.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
Yeah. All right, it's great. I mean, that's a business you're guaranteed to make money in.
Right.
Because everybody's basically paying a loser tax the moment they walk in there. So Craig, it's going to be a hard day. It is a bit of an, I mean, I know that even Rasmus Anderson referred to the building as, quote unquote, it's not an NHL building. Most of the players were too polite to want to say anything about it because they didn't want to embarrass the Coyotes organization. We referenced the difference in attendance, but I never tweeted it out because, again, I don't want to embarrass Arizona for the numbers there. Could it work here, in your opinion? You've covered this. You've been one of the guys that have been around. I also got to say, they had Rich Nairn, who is a top five PR guy. They had Greg here as well.
Greg Dillard,
really good PR department for a number of years. And when Rich left last year, my spidey senses started to like, okay, I wonder if something's going on here. Is there a mechanism where it could exist and it could work here in the desert?
I absolutely think there is. And I think the NHL does, too. The NHL looks at this as a very good market, but you have to have the right pieces in place. Look, I always refer to it as the original sin. Their original sin was moving west to Glendale in 2003. They never should have left downtown or the east side because that's where their season ticket base is. It's where their premium season ticket base is. It's where the population and wealth bases are. And it's where the corporate base is. It made no sense in this city. But Steve Ellman was looking for a real estate deal. He didn't care about the hockey team. And ever since then, everything that you've seen that's come since then has been a product of that decision. Even, I think, the ownership groups that have come in and looked at the financials of this franchise and said, you can't necessarily get the right groups, right? You might get more speculative guys that are maybe looking to make money off the valuation of the team, like Ice Arizona did.
Right.
Like George Gosby, right after they sold the team, God rest his soul, said, we crushed the investment. And I was like, that's your first reaction to selling a professional franchise? Did you care about the team? It's just been crazy to see this parade of people come through. But when I look at the growth in USA Hockey numbers, the percentages in youth hockey, it's growing just top 10 every year. It's been top 5 many years. There are a lot of people that care about hockey. You just have to have the right ownership group, and you have to be in the right location.
Well, it's interesting, you know, because I was quite taken aback the first couple times I went out to Glendale back in 2008, and Wayne was coaching the team at that time. Wayne actually...
Did you pick cotton while you were out there?
No, but it was interesting because Wayne came on with the Coyotes, came on my old show, Total Sports, back in 2007, and he said, you will be asking me whether or not I would have been an Edmonton Oiler under a Daryl Gates-owned scenario. Mm-hmm. And he goes, you make sure you ask me that. And the first thing he said, because, of course, he got sold. He's not traded to the LA Kings. He was sold by Peter Parkland to Bruce McDowell, who, in the end, didn't have the real money to begin with. You know, he went, you know what, up within 3 or 4 years after getting Wayne. And I remember Wayne telling our listeners at that time, look, if Daryl Cates had owned the team when I was playing, I would have never played for any other organization other than the Edmonton Oilers. And I remember thinking, it's a pretty distinct message. But I just remember going out to Glendale and go, there's nothing here.
There really wasn't.
And
I mean, arguably, there really isn't all that much. There's Westgate, but...
And are they not making more money by not having... Is that the...
Well, they say they are. I haven't seen the books. So.
You haven't seen the... So you're not...
a tough time believing.
So at the end of the day, look, it's 6:19 at Edmonton, 5:19 here in Arizona. We're about an hour and 40 minutes away from puck drop. We'll mention that the face-off show begins in 16 minutes' time. Bittersweet night. Hard night. Not quite sure what to expect in the building. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know if there's any sweetness to it. I don't even know I'd say bittersweet. This is tough for a lot of people who have invested so much time and emotion and money into this franchise to see it go away after all this. It's awful. There are a lot of people struck hard by this.
And you know what? I think it just reinforces how lucky Edmonton got because it was closer than people realized back in the 96 to about the 98 window. Craig, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, always great to talk to you, Bob.
Absolutely. It is 6:19 in Edmonton, back with Brendan Escott, the Stay in Oilers history, and it was a big one for Wayne Gretzky, and I watched it. Brendan wasn't born yet, but I remember watching it, and he lit him up. This is Oilers Now. Brendan, where are you going to go back to?
1983, when Wayne Gretzky set a playoff record for points in a game with 4 goals and 3 assists as the Oilers pommeled the Flames 10-2 in Game 3 of the Smythe Division Final. That record was broken 6 years later by Devils forward Patrick Sundstrom, who scored 8 for, again, New Jersey.
In that game, Dave Semenko, the late Dave Semenko, got in a fight with Tim Hunter. And as the fight was coming to an end, Sammy got a late shot. He got a match penalty. And the Oilers ended up shorthanded. And I think they had 3 or 4 shorthanded goals in that game. They lit up the Flames a couple times in that series. Beat them in 5 in 83. Then they beat the Flames. The Flames took them to 7 in 87. Of course, Calgary upset Edmonton. Their only series victory in 86. Oilers got them in 88. Marty McSorley is going to be on with Brendan on Friday for a Conlon Motorsports throwback feature. And Marty's going to talk a bit about the Battle of Alberta, what it meant in the day. He was part of that. It was actually an upset in 88 when Edmonton swept the Flames. So there you have it. So tomorrow we'll have a full preview of the Oilers game. I will join you from Colorado. Sportsnet color analyst Louis DeBrus for GCL Diesel. Ron McLean from NHL Hockey and Rogers for Century Casino Edmonton. Paul Coffey will join us on tomorrow's show. Up next, the Global News weather traffic update with Thomas Dias. Reid Wilkins has the City Ford Face-Off Show at 6:35, and I will join you at 7:05 Edmonton time. Rita.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.